Welcome back to the Coogan Chronicles podcast, a podcast where two former child actors
hang out and talk to other former child actors.
About what, AJ?
About growing up in the biz.
My name's Chris Marquette. Your name is
AJ Trouth. Chris, I have an intro for you today.
What's up? Look at that.
So summer's about to start.
I'm proud of you, by the way. I'm real proud of you.
Thank you. Summer's about to start officially. We're just through Memorial Day. We're recording this in the beginning of June. And one thing I think you can relate to about being a child actor is you never take vacation. You are always home. You're never traveling because, God forbid, an audition comes through and you're not available. So you just don't travel. You stay home. But now, being adults, having turned over new pages in our lives, having gotten over these old modes of thinking, I'm curious if you have any fun summer travel plans this year for yourself.
I do. I think my wife and daughter and I were going to explore Northern California a little bit. I think we're going to go to Bali, which will be dope.
Wow. That'll
be dope to go see Andrew McFarlane and our good buddy who's been on this podcast, who lives out there. So we're thinking about doing that. Andrew wants to shoot a YouTube show, this really funny idea that he's come up with that is like sketchy comedy thing that him and I have been working out. And so I think if we can plan out a trip and shooting something, I think we're going to go out to Bali. But you're right, to speak to that. Wait,
let me ask you a question about Bali, though. Yeah. If you were not doing any work out there, if there was not the prospect of doing filming, would you still be going?
Nope, absolutely not. But you're right. It is such a, I think being in the entertainment industry, it really does, like everybody, not just actors or even young performers or child actors, you're tied to your vacation time is tied to work always in a way that is not normal. You know, that is not
okay.
Like,
I have a job that's filming in Turkey, so I'm going to go a week early so I can enjoy a little bit of vacation, or I'm going to tack a week on at the end.
That is all of my trips I've ever taken in my life. Has rarely been. Once I've met my wife, we actually took trips, but I remember it was a big deal because I was like, "Well, we're just gonna take the trip," you know? She's like, "Yeah, like you book a ticket and you go on a trip." I'm like, "I don't know. What if we miss an audition?" She's like, "You need to get over it because that is." But you're right; it's ingrained. I mean, every young performer and their family—that's what they do. You know, I mean, that's what. Like, I had two vacations in my life as a child. Three. One was I performed in Washington, D.C. for this weird thing, by the way. I totally forgot this existed, for the American Teacher Awards, which still happens every year. But I went with like a traveling group of young singer dancers and we performed some song and dance number for the American Teacher Awards. But we got to go to Washington, D.C. And because of that, my mom and I got to go out a day early and then go see Washington, D.C. There's vacation one, you know, right. So it's just me and my mom, though, not my brothers, not my dad. Not that at all. And then the second vacation was we would come out to California, and our vacation was because I'm coming out to California to try out for pilots during pilot season, we're also going to go to Universal Studios and Disneyland. Vacation number two, you know? Yeah. And then the third one was I did this. There was a little while where I was about to do this huge commercial series for Xerox copy machines, or Xerox the company. And it was me and this guy, I forgot his name, named John something, who was he was on Seinfeld. He was, I forgot what character. He's a very posh, well-spoken announcer. And he's got this very amazing voice. And he always plays the same character. Anyway, him and I were going to be the new spokespeople for Xerox. So we did this commercial. And then they took the commercial to Vegas to a big conference where they were going to show their shareholders and all the people from the company, their new hosts and their new commercial line. And it ended up getting squashed. I have no idea why. Maybe because I got up there and ruined the whole experience. I have no recollection of what actually happened sitting on this huge stage. Nobody had ever even prepared me for that. That's a side note to say that was the actual only vacation we took, which is they were like, "You guys are going to go to Vegas for the weekend to do this conference." And my whole family was like, "And we're going to play a little blackjack." And so we all went out and hung out at Planet Hollywood and saw, you know, Cirque du Soleil shows and, but that was it. But you're right. It is just totally tied. For you, I mean, you went to New Zealand and you went to Romania.
Yeah. After I became an actor, so after 11 years old, I had a few trips. I got to go to New York. That was work related. Mm-hmm. I got to go to Romania, shooting a movie there. And I got to go to New Zealand. Again, I was shooting a movie there. I could be wrong and my mom could correct me, but I'm pretty certain those are the only trips the entire time I was an actor before the age of like 24 that I took outside of Los Angeles. I think I was in Los Angeles the entire from the age of 12.
And the age of 24. Here's the thing is, where do you think that pressure, does that pressure come from agents and stuff and managers or from other parents of former kid actors? They tell you like you can't miss. The thing is that your window's tiny. You can't miss an opportunity. You just can't miss. You got to be here, you know, because your life can change tomorrow. Is that the thing?
The pressure is definitely there from them to a certain degree. Also, we were never the family that took big trips. So I said I didn't do any traveling.
That's
almost 100% true. I did go see my grandparents in Chicago and Wisconsin a handful of times in those intervening years. That's literally it, though. That actually is it. And I think it's
just because we come from broken homes. Is this really it? It's because we're from broken homes and our parents. Even if we weren't young performers, they're like, we're not going anywhere, guys.
It is partially my family style, but there is more and more of us where that's the case. We have a lot of close friends where there was no travel happening with. That was not work related.
That's true.
But yeah, I'm really proud of you. Now, this year you have one trip. You guys are going to go to Northern California as a family. I know that this has a lot to do with
your, and you know what I will say is
inspiring it. But good for you guys.
No. But you know what I'll say? I'll take credit where credit's due here, and I'll give myself some credit because of that life where we didn't take trips, because I'm always stuck to being an actor and we're just glued to that. I have specifically as a parent now with a 2-year-old made it a point to be like, I'm going to ensure that that's not the case in my life and that I am going to go like get, you know, give my daughter and, you know, my wife and our family a normal life in that respect. And we're going to take trips just to take trips. And I'm not going to worry about auditions or work and stuff. And, but I will say, here's what happens to me though. It's like we booked this trip and I'm like, I got to let my agents know. It's like the first thought. We're like, I'm going to let my agents know, even though I'm unemployed at the moment and there's no job.
Oh my gosh. I can remember the years. Like,
I can let them know, you know, I'm out from June 22nd to July 6th. I'm done. Okay. Just, but call me if you need me, cause I can always come back. That's really, it's always the deal. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, guys.
Okay, cool.
Here's what we got. Okay, here we go. We're just gonna transition right into. We got Andrew Leeds with us here. Andrew Harrison Leeds is what we learned. Good name. You get to hear why he squashed that middle name from his life, and in a funny little tidbit. This guy's so incredible. He's an incredible actor. You've seen him on so many things. We remember him from Major Pain when he was a kid. That Damon Wayans. Movie, yeah, which was hilarious. He's one of the cadets that are in there. But he has been working as an adult actor a ton. He was on Barry on HBO. We didn't work together on that, but he's been on that the last couple seasons. He was just on Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. He's going to be doing this new cool Apple show, I believe with Steve Carell or something really cool. But anyway, he's got a really big, bright future. He's super talented. He's a great writer as well. And so without further adieu, Andrew Leeds.
It's also a very, very modern hand gesture that person's making.
It's weird, and he seems like he's a bit of a. He seems like he's
a hipster.
Yeah, it doesn't seem so. Very modern. It's like a, it's weird.
Yeah, can you show it to us one more time? Is that a Santa hat? What does he wear? Yeah.
No, I think he's just rich. No.
He's just rich, yeah. Oh, I see. He's just got a crown. He's just got a nice.
I mean,
he's got like that hype beast thing going on. He spent way too much money on a weird hat and just doesn't care. He's rich.
It's so weird. Look how smudgy my phone. Anyway, yeah. Sorry.
That's you as a super rich hipster, dude. That's hilarious. That's it.
Yeah, pretty great.
out in Silver Lake enjoying a mimosa with your giant mustache.
You know what's funny? When I hit record. Did you hit record already?
Yeah, I just started. Yeah.
Never mind. I won't say what I was going to say.
Anyway. No, please. Yeah. No, please. Yeah. I wanted to get that picture of you in there somehow. It's really funny. Where did she find the painting? Where did it come from?
It was on BBC.com that they had found all these old artworks that were worth a lot of money or something. And that was the one that they showed.
It's not new. It's not a contemporary one. It's a legit old one.
It's 350 years old. Yeah.
Wow. That's my wife said that to me when we met. She was like, within an hour of meeting, she was like, I've seen your face before. And I was like, on TV? She was like, no, in like an old Renaissance painting. I was like, was I beheading somebody? I bet it was like, I was like, I've got like, yeah, old white guy face. So
that's so weird.
That's funny.
Yeah.
What were you going to say though? Sorry. I cut you.
No. It's fine. It wasn't, it's totally not real. It's just, it's totally irrelevant to anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. I was just asking AJ, I was like, how do we start off the conversation with you for this? And my one thought was, I was obsessed with Major Pain as a kid, and yeah. I suddenly realized
me too, for the record, and AJ as well, but
I realized how often I used to torture my little brothers with a bunch of the Major Pain things. Like anytime, like if one of them got hurt and they were crying, I'd be like, listen, I'm going to break your finger. You're going to feel a little bit of pressure. I was like, I do this all the time to them. And yeah, it was such That's a good, funny. Yeah, it was really, does that have staying power? That must have staying power in your life in some way.
Yeah, it's funny. It is funny how, you know, when people like will stop, you be like, hey, I know you from something, you know, and you never expect it to be Major Pain, because that's now almost, it's like 28 years ago, you know?
Wow.
So you don't expect it to be that. But then it's, sometimes it's like, oh man, like, I got to tell you, like, I love Major Pain. Like, yeah. Yeah. Probably twice in my entire life. Cause I remember going to see my family, and my family being like, I don't know if this is a good movie. Clearly you thought it was a great movie.
I was obsessed. I mean, Little Giants and Major Pain. Those two movies were like religion in my house.
Oh my God. Classics. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel the same way.
But yeah,
I remember seeing.
There's going to be a little delay.
We should have started with that. It makes conversing a little bit difficult. I'll get this one thought out. I remember seeing the guys from Lord of the Rings, all of the hobbits, out at the movies. It was right. Elijah Wood and the other. Sean Astin wasn't there, but the two other guys were there, and they're just hanging out. This is like 10 years after Lord of the Rings came out, and they're just buds going to the movies in Los Feliz. Do you and the other kids from Major Pain still get together and hang out every so often?
We do a thing every Tuesday night.
We get a high stakes poker game.
We go to Vegas every Tuesday. We'll just drive the van.
Damon's the dealer. Yeah.
I see Steve Martini, the cadet Alex Stone, if you recall, the sort of lead guy. I see him.
Oh, yeah.
I see him occasionally. He actually shot a movie that he wrote and directed, and I played a little part in it about a year ago. I see anybody else or converse with anyone else. But what was I going to say? Steve and I are still in touch. I remember my audition for Major Pain. At my audition, I saw auditioning for that lead role, that, you know, whatever, for his role, Seth Green, I remember seeing there. And I remember seeing Fred Savage there. And the funny thing about that is I remember he did his audition. He left. I think I was like right after him. He left the room and then he went back like right as they were about to bring me in. He like knocked on the door. They opened the door. He's like, hey, can I come back in? I think I can do it better. And I just sort of
while you're in there.
No, I wasn't in there yet. But I just remember thinking like, oh, like everybody always has that feeling, like even Fred Savage, you know. Who wasn't that far off out of the Wonder Years at that point, you know, it's like he was, you know, he had just been on a big TV show, and done some big movies. Yeah.
Meaning it just never leaves you no matter what job you get or
I guess
what
so, experience yeah.
you have. You're like, okay.
But I think I remember actually thinking like, oh, probably don't need to go back and say you could do it better. And yet I do that all the time.
Yeah.
But they cast, I think they cast Joey Lawrence actually in the role. And then he refused to shave his head. And so.
That's something I would have done. You want me to get rid of this? This is the magic, guys. This is the money. This thing, that's hilarious. He refused to shave his head.
It's hilarious that they told you too, as another actor that associated with the project.
The reason I think I knew that was because we didn't have that. We were all there doing boot camp for 2 weeks before, and that guy, that role wasn't there. And then like the day before we started shooting, or a couple of days before Steve Martini showed up, because, and so we sort of knew, like, we would heard, oh, it's going to be Joey Lawrence. And then it wasn't. You know what? Can I just pause for 1 second? Because I fell on some stairs like 8-9 months ago. And my butt hurts and I need to find something to sit on. That was a fun detour.
Exactly. Sorry. No, don't be. Then speaking of, I guess, celebrities, speaking of two things, one, shaving your head will be an interesting part of this conversation, because I was just asking AJ if he ever got to shave his, or was, and he said he was asked and was like,
multiple times. No way. No.
Multiple times.
Yeah. But
that was all I was dying for as a kid. For whatever reason, I think it was, I grew up in Jersey and all the kids had like buzzed haircuts or frosted tips. Or they'd get frosted tips and then buzz their hair once it sort of grew. So I had this like long 90s kid actor mullet thing going on. And I was like dying for a job where I could shave my head, like dying for, like, I was up for like some commercial and they were like, if you get this, you get to shave your head. And I've never wanted a job so bad in my life. And then I didn't get it. And it was devastating. And I was like, please let me shave my head. And I remember my mom or dad were like, nope, the agents say it'll be bad for business. You're not going to shave your head. You need this. You need it.
Why won't you shave your head, AJ?
I think I was. When I was
got beautiful hair, and his hair is his power.
What it was when I was young is my ears stuck out so much that I was concerned I would look like a total freak ahead if I shaved it.
So when I found out I got major pain, I realized I'd have to shave my head, and I was worried about my ears sticking out.
Really?
And so yeah.
Is this something we all share in common?
Plastic surgery.
Yeah.
My ears are not like huge, so I don't know what I was so worried about.
Regular. But yeah.
I think part of I think they were bigger, but what I did was, from the month before we went to shoot, before I went to Virginia to shoot, I wore a headband around my head every single night, and I'd wake up in the morning, my ears would hurt so bad.
Andrew, no, you did not. Oh my God, that is the most child actory thing I've ever heard ever.
It doesn't get more child actor.
And why did I not? Why did I not think of that?
19 rubber bands on my head to crunch my ears to my.
It was so painful. I don't know. Look, it may have made the difference. I don't know, because maybe
Honestly, those
are looking good.
They're looking real good. You got a great line there. You got a good. It's so funny. I wonder what that is too, because I also, like, when my wife and I met, and we had getting to know each other conversations. I remember we had one where we spent a few minutes talking about the things we don't like about ourselves, and that was number one on my list. I was like, I've always like hated that my ears stick out. She's like,
interesting.
What are you talking about? Your ears are fine. They're totally normal. I was like, they don't. They totally stick out. And I realized in that conversation, I was like, oh, I've just been thinking that since I was a little child actor. I don't know what got into me. What do you guys think that
probably
is?
Probably somebody said to you that your ears stick out.
What is that?
Someone is that what it was?
At some point, yeah. Who knows? It all takes is one person saying something to you and you're done. Right?
That's you're done. You got a complex for life. One casting director's like, you got some goofy little ears that stick out, kid. You're adorable. And you're like,
for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, how does that? I feel like you strike me as a very confident person, and like, you know, and I don't know if that's because you're very smart and talented, and you know, but also did you always feel really confident as like a kid actor? Or what were you like as a kid actor? I have no idea.
Wait, hold on a second. Well, I hid myself by my visual. How do I get that back?
Oh, you hid it? I don't know. I can see you.
You can?
Yeah,
we can see you.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You can see us?
And you can see me moving, because I was frozen. That's why I tried.
Okay. Yeah, it does a weird, when we start recording, it like seems like it glitches and slows down and we can't figure out why. But when you actually play the recording back, totally fine.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it's weird.
Anyway, no, I don't think I would consider myself to be terribly, confident. I wouldn't say that's true. No. I think people think that. I don't know why. Well, I don't know. Some people think that, and then some people, I either get like, you're very confident, or I get, you're so neurotic. So I'm not really sure what the truth is. I'm
depends
sure
on the day and the conversation. Yeah.
Maybe I'm confidently neurotic, but I actually don't think of myself as neurotic either. And I don't think of myself as particularly confident either.
Yeah. maybe just a normal, well-rounded human being is maybe what it is.
No, I think I'm confident, probably confident about certain things, but to answer your, wait, what was your question though?
Maybe like the
what were like, you like as a child actor?
Yeah, what were you like? And also like what was that whole? I guess like were you? Did you feel like you were given complex after complex from things people would tell you? Like or?
Oh yeah, for sure. I have a number of complexes. You know, I think from you know from being I started when I you know when I was doing theater. I was doing theater from like when I was 8 to when I was 13. Then it wasn't really a problem. Like your looks weren't really a problem. It was like, if you were good and like, you were like well-behaved and, you know, it didn't matter if you were like, it didn't matter if you fit into the family, people bought it. I mean, that's not actually totally true. The first show I did was a Broadway musical and all the kids were like blonde hair, blue eyed. And we were all part of the family. It was to play. It was a musical about Teddy Roosevelt and it was playing his kids. And when I was the understudy, and when I took over the role, they tried to dye my hair, and they ended up trying to dye it blonde, and it turned red. It turned red. But so I guess they cared in some regard there, but it wasn't enough to stop them from hiring me. But then when I started auditioning for TV shows when I was a kid, like when you know I was like 14 and 15, it was always a problem. It was always like, no, you don't really fit in the family because you're dark and you know you're ethnic, whatever that meant, you know what I mean? You know, which essentially meant Jewish. And actually for years, I would not tell people I was Jewish. Even really? Like when I say for years, I mean like up until I was like 30, people would say, well, cause I always thought like it counted against me. You know what I mean? Like I always thought like I'm, if they think I'm Jewish, then I'm not going to fit in the family. Like, if they think I'm Jewish, well, first of all, I think growing up also in Florida where there weren't a lot of Jewish people, I think that I always just thought that people don't really like Jewish people to some degree. And I remember as a kid sort of being made fun of and things like that. So and then it was always like,
it was also like 90s teenage boy or prepubescent boy humor in the 90s, I feel like was peak, like, you know, not too harmful, but like peak anti-Semitic humor. Like there was like I experienced a lot of that in Jersey and in Georgia and in Texas. Like I lived in all those places and it was a lot of, you know,
Are you Jewish?
I'm not, no, but I, no, no, but what's funny is my whole life, people have assumed I'm Jewish even till today. Like I've known people since I was like 15 years and they literally go, "You're not Jewish?" I'm like, "No, I've never talked about that. Oh, really? Yeah. I played a lot of Jewish characters. So what's funny for me is when you say like, right, I'm not Jewish, there were times where people were like, "Well, you're Jewish, right?" And I would go, "No." And I got this weird feeling where I was like, I think I should have said yes. It's like, I think if I said yes, that would benefit me. And this is like, so it's so weird to hear you say you shunned that. Cause for me, I was like, oh, maybe I should just start saying.
You know, it was always like, you know, like I remember even as an adult, I remember testing for a TV show on the WB, which I was never, you know, again, that you're never going to get because, I mean, I remember going into my agent's office and saying like, hey, how come like all these friends of mine are like going in for all these like, you know, WB shows and I'm not. And and the agent like sat me down and was like, I'm going to be really honest with you. Like, you don't like, you're like attractive, but you're not that.
I've had that exact conversation,
you know. So I think that also put a lot of things in my head of like, oh, you're not attractive enough, you know, your hair's too curly. Like I embarrassingly like had my hair, I was working with a guy once and I was like, oh, your hair, like I said something to him about his hair. He goes, oh, my hair is like naturally like yours. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, oh, I get it chemically straightened. I was like, really? He goes, yeah. He's like, I work so much more with it, it's chemically straightened. And I was like, oh, interesting. All right. Well, the, you know, and so I did that for a while. If you go back and look at pictures, it looks so stupid and horrible. Terrible. You know, I think I was always like different. Anytime anyone said something to me like that, I remember testing for the show for the WB, which I was never going to get anyway. And then, you know, the dad was one of the Baldwin brothers, I think. I don't even remember which one. And, you know, I went and got like blue, you know, contact lenses because they were like, you know, he's got blue eyes. It's not going to work, you know? And so it's like, I, you know, all these things in my head are like blue eyes better, you know, you know, not Jewish better. Yeah. Like all these things got stuck in my head,
and,
you know?
And I can relate to this in so many ways going through this stuff. I remember testing for a CW show and testing for two roles in the same show, both the protagonist and the antagonist, and being like, and not getting either of them, and then going, yeah. Oh, it's like there at a certain point, the transition was made of everyone is an underwear model. Every male being cast in a CW show is an underwear model. And if you're not that, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you could fit that mold way better than Andrew or I could.
Yeah. I was going to say, you
at least got a chance because I totally get you, Andrew. Like that was,
there's a whole other level.
There is. I think you needed to perfect the smoldering was really where you probably
that was never gonna happen.
Not naturally. Smoldering is really where you fell short, unfortunately. But I totally get the, like, because I had all of that. It was the same. I would test for shows and I remember I'd walk in and there would be like these beautiful little platinum blonde hair, blue eyed kids, and I was like, there's no way I'm getting this, and I never would, you know. And it was and it was that when I would ask somebody a genuine opinion, I'd be like, yo, why do I got friends who are doing this? And like almost verbatim what you just said, you know, I was like, well, especially like CWWB young adult content, I was like, I don't even really get a shot at this stuff. And so I remember someone finally one day was like, you really want to know the truth? And I was like, please. And they're like, your face. And I was like, yeah, I guess you're right. I totally get that. Do you feel like, because you've had a long, steady career too, did you,
not about steady,
when did you
long.
Start to that's okay, so a long career. I want to hear about that. that's interesting you say that, because it feels like it's been long and steady for you. But when do you feel like you maybe shed those things, or are you still shedding those things, or like, what, you know, for you being a lifelong actor, has that stuff stuck around in a lot of ways? Or do you feel like did you go through a period where you were like, fuck the system, I'm me, you know? Or like, what happened in relation to those?
I think I started to just try to embrace who I was, you know, and just be okay with it and stop listening. You know, it's like my mom always used to say, like, oh, you know, I like your hair long. So I always just like try to keep it long, and it'd be, I like your hair long. And then it didn't feel comfortable to me. And so finally I just like stopped letting my hair be long, and I'm much happier. Like, you know, I just think like I was constantly listening to anyone who had advice. I mean, I still do, but anybody who had like any sort of advice, sure, I'll try that. Like, but I think eventually I just started realizing that, you know, I am who I am. And I also think things did loosen up. Like, well, also I stopped being playing a teenager, so I didn't have to fit into families as easily, right? Which was helpful. But I also think that people don't care as much about that anymore. It's like those things have loosened up. It used to be like very strict, you know, like you have to look like the rest of the family. It actually not totally true, because the show I just did, or you know, that I finished like a year ago, Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. When the creator of the show said, hey, I would really love for you to do this. Like, because he's a friend of mine. He's like, I'd love for you to do it. And I said, great. And he goes, okay, great. It's happening. All good. And then he wrote me like the next day, and he was like, hey, I don't know if this is going to work out. And I was like, why not? He's like, well, you know, we're just a little worried that maybe you don't fit into the family. Like, you don't physically.
If you write a memoir book, that's the title. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
Maybe you don't fit in the family.
And by the way, really interesting about this in particular is that he's a Jewish man who was writing about his own family, but the family in the show was actually not Jewish, which is, again, it's like, you know, and I understand the reasons for it, but it does have an effect on you to think like, well, if they were writing a story, an autobiographical story, and it's about a Jewish family, why are they celebrating Christmas and doing all these other things that are not Jewish? It makes you feel as a Jewish person that maybe people don't want to see Jewish people. Like, maybe there is why did they change it otherwise? And I guess part of the reason you could say is, well, the majority of the world is not, or the majority of the United States is not Jewish. In fact, a very, very, very small part of it is. So it's possible that they just didn't want to, you know, that they want to cater to people, you know, that are the majority in some way. But anyway, so he said, you know, we're worried you don't fit in the family because it's Jane Levy and Mary Steenburgen and Peter Gallagher.
To which I said, I'm not the one who doesn't fit in that family. It's Jane's the one who doesn't fit in that family. Like I actually could, like, yeah. You know, I actually, I played.
In I'm a perfect fit in that family.
First of all, Mary kind of looks like my real mom, but also, I play in a movie. I played I played Adam in a flashback. I played Adam Brody's father in a flashback, and Adam Brody and Peter Gallagher was Adam Brody's father on the OC. So clearly, there's like, you know, there's some
There's a whole
in some
yeah.
way. It could yeah. work. And so you know, and ultimately they were like, oh yeah, you're right. Yeah, it makes sense. And Jane and I are both Jewish, and so it was also
is that
like,
all it takes? Just somebody has to say. I love that. That's so. The studio comes to you and says, "Actually, you don't fit in the family." And you go, "Actually, I do because of X, Y, and Z." Yeah. And they go, "Oh, you're right. Okay, sure, you got it."
To his credit, somebody, I won't say who it was, came up to me afterwards and said, "I was the person who said you don't fit in the family, and I was wrong." Yeah. Wrong.
Oh wow!
And I'm sorry, you know, sorry that I said that. But I actually sent back a grid of the four of us, and I sent it back, and I said, "Who doesn't fit here?"
It's not me. Just a big red circle.
That's funny. So like, what are we talking about? If you're worried about that, like, it's crazy. Anyway, so yeah, I think. Like,
hey, good for you. That also feels indicative of your more mature self being able to stand up and not just go, "Oh, you must be right. I'm sorry. I'll put blue contacts in and dye my hair red and do whatever
else
you want."
Yeah, I was about to say, it sounds like you got past the complexes. If you and when I asked like when you shed them, obviously to get to that place.
Yeah, I think just like, just I think the more that I worked, you know, the more that I would get jobs, the more that I felt comfortable shedding them. And also the more like, I think I saw myself on screen, and I guess I saw, forget that. I will say this. I always have enjoyed playing characters that are not like, I always like one of the first jobs I got was on The Practice, like doing a couple episodes of The Practice. And like, I was playing like this would never fly today, but they hired me to play somebody who was half black.
Oh really?
Yeah. Part of the reveal was that you thought that the guy was white, but he was a white supremacist. And then you found out that he's half black. So they needed somebody who, you know, could conceivably be, I guess. Although
let's put that episode under the microscope of today and see how we fare. That's really complicated. Sorry,
but the character was like, he was, you know, I described it as like androgynous and all these sorts of things. And I remember I went before my audition for David Kelly. I went to the mall. And I had them at the makeup counter. I had them put like just a little bit of eyeliner on my eyes, just because, and just like the character was just not me. And I think I was very shy, and I still am. I think just naturally I'm just shy. And so for me, it's always like, I would prefer to be like covered up in some way. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I would prefer for people not to be just looking necessarily at me. And I think part of what really helped that and helped me feel comfortable was doing the Groundlings and doing sketch of the Groundlings, because it's all about wigs and makeup, and it's all kind of about, you know, making yourself look as bad as possible, you know, in terms of like your physicality. So the pictures of me at the Groundlings are like some of the most, I mean, I look grotesque. And I think that pushing myself to that, in that direction, which A, kind of actually did feel more comfortable for me, just made me feel like, oh, this is okay. Like, it's okay. Like, this is for me, this is more fun and more what I, you know, I don't know. I think that helped me just sort of be like, okay with like, if I can look that bad, you know, whatever, that's stupid, then the rest of it is like, whatever, it's fine. I think that probably helped quite a bit.
Do you think, Andrew, that there's this concept of lizard brain, which is when we're reacting to life in such a way that is very instinctual or very primal. Do you think for former child actors that there's former child actor brain that comes into play at times, and you're not reacting to life's circumstances or events as a full-fledged adult performer, but rather there's some carryover from your days as a child?
I mean, I think for sure. I think some things, you know, there are definitely things like different, like acting teachers as a kid that would tell me to do certain things. Like I definitely have probably spent like 20, 30 years kind of shedding, you know, that maybe they were helpful and maybe they're not wrong, but there's like, I mean, when I think of like how I used to act as a kid, which I carried into acting as an adult, which was a mistake, I think. I mean, I know it was a mistake. I mean, I think I would have been way more successful if I had not had so many bad habits, you know. Really? Part of it's my personality. Part of it's just like obsessive, wanting to get things right, perfectionist. But part of it was also that combined with the things that I was taught growing up about acting. And I just don't think it served me at all. I mean, I know it didn't.
What are some examples of that? Yeah, like what are your memories of like some, were you in acting classes like often, or was there like specific teachers? Were you kind of?
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, and like, how does that come about? Did you seek that out, or did some agent be like, you should go to this coach, or you know, like how does that fall into the picture?
I think as a kid, I was always. I mean, I think everybody was like, oh yeah, he sings really great, like. But if you want them to act like you should go to a coach, like, you know, I think everybody I think always just sort of thought the acting part was a mystery, which is interesting because like, if you look at like David Krumholtz, for example, who I've known since I was 13 years old, because we both were doing Broadway shows at the same time, we shared an alley. He was doing Conversation with My Father with Jason Biggs. And I was doing a show called Falsettos, and which was a musical. His was a play. And I auditioned, and David, he got that. He was like a middle school student and like got that part sort of randomly. He'd never really acted before. And he was just amazing. And then he proceeded to like get every single role after that forever and ever and ever. And it was just like, how is this like happening? And he just, I think he was kind of like untouched. Like he was just a really, really naturally great actor. And just did it. He just did it. And he didn't. But for me, it was like always like, oh no, you should go to a coach. And those coaches were helpful, I think, in certain ways. But ultimately, I was never going to get to be the actor that David was going to a coach. You know, I mean, I don't think I ever would get to be the actor David is. I think David's incredible. But I think that there was just a little bit too much of like a, almost like a gymnastics, like working with a gymnastics coach, and they're telling you, okay, this is what you're gonna do here, this is what you're gonna do here, this is how you hit this, this is how you hit this, versus actually just being a good actor.
Yeah.
and believing.
Yeah.
That's not to say that there aren't some skills along the way that you can pick up. And by the way, David is a naturally very, very funny person. Like, he's just fun. He's just funny. So, maybe I wasn't that funny. I don't know. Maybe I needed like somebody to have, hey, maybe this is funnier if you do it like this. I don't know.
Krumholtz too. He also seems like, I mean, his personality is loud as well, you know, and maybe I'm projecting this onto you, or maybe I'm just, empathizing with you and somebody, but I always felt too, like growing up for me, like I didn't have a very loud personality. I was also very, very shy. And so, you know, so I remember thinking that like, when I would see a young performer with a very vibrant personality that they were not scared to let loose into their world, whether it even just be on set, not even the acting part of it, but just like hang around people. It was so wild and impressive to me. And I thought like, oh, I'm sure that's carried them into different jobs and carried them throughout their career. But I was thinking too with
I have to throw this in there though, Chris, because it's just a point to make that everything is relative, because I felt about you the way that Andrew felt about Krumholtz, in that you were so talented. You were working all the time. You could cry at the drop of a hat. It didn't matter. Just whatever it was, you could be crying.
Mystery. And, he was like, oh, fucking cry.
And, in 4 seconds, you would be ticking and crying and just like convulsing, foaming at the mouth on yourself so convincingly. It was so impressive. So I always felt that way about you as an actor, and you never went to class. I was in classes and trying to figure it out and the thing and trying to make right.
But that's what I was going to bring up, is that that's how I relate too, is I remember like I would go into some classes, especially when I moved from New York to Los Angeles, and all of a sudden I was out here, and I would, and lots of young actors were always in classes. And so I finally went to my parents. I was like, hey, let me try a class. I keep hearing about different classes, and I hadn't done them before. And next thing I knew, I walked in and there were these very, I'm sure very useful, but to me, very foreign and strange acting techniques and stuff, you know, and I would watch these like super successful young actors sit there and do these like really weird, you know, like I remember there was an exercise where they're like, before every single line, I want you to take 30 seconds and just stare at me. And I was like, what is going on? And we'd like, they'd read this 2-page scene for like 20 minutes. And I was like, what are you guys doing? And it seemed so intense. And it seemed like there was this big secret that I had no idea existed. And all of a sudden I did, you know, but like you kind of put, all of a sudden I felt like, in retrospect, I was like, I feel like I'm going to learn some bad habits or some weird, some mental gymnastics that are not going to prove totally useful. But I had this other thought about it all. One, I wondered with someone like Krumholtz in particular, and like having another actor that seemed like, cause he did, that guy worked like nonstop. Right. And all kinds of cool stuff. Did how much of a part of your experience as an actor does that play? Like, did he become, I feel like a lot of young actors have, you get somebody that, you know, that kind of represents a little like of like the dangling carrot a little in some way of your own career. And so like, was Krumholtz that guy for you, or what was it for you? And then the other question I had too was like, you know, is there anything in particular with acting coaches or casting directors or directors or producers where you felt like somebody did something actually specifically damaging? Was there like ever anything where you're like, that wasn't cool, or man, I really got sent down the line in a way that was awful.
To answer your question about Krumholtz, he's actually, I actually just recently saw him, and I love him. He's a great guy. And actually, I don't know if you remember, but the pilot that I wrote that we sort of met at, right? Cause you at that audition, right? Yeah. And you were that you auditioned for that a part I wrote for myself that Chris came and auditioned for, and he was amazing. he was amazing.
I went to the chemistry read with the actress, okay. And that was always that was, I told AJ this because he goes, how do you know Andrew? I was like, I went to this chemistry read for this awesome pilot, and I have no idea who's in there. It was the first time I'm reading, and I looked into the whoever I'm reading for, and you were there, and I was like, I know that actor, that guy's so good, what the fuck is he doing in here? Because I'd never read with like a contemporary act, like an actor that I see and like would probably audition next to. And I think it was like a year later I saw you at an actual audition, and we, you said hey, and I went, hey dude, can I ask you something? What were you doing in there? Like, what, why were you watching me? And you were like, I wrote it, and I thought, why weren't you doing it? And you gave me your crazy story that haunted me for a while.
So I wrote it for myself, and the first day that we had like a casting meeting with the studio, and I remember I had sort of started, that was the first time I said to like the people like, hey, I wrote this for myself, I want to play this role. And the first things out of their mouths on the call was like, what about David Krumholtz? and I was like, okay, well, all right, sure. You know, he's a friend. I'd love him to do it. And strangely, in that moment, this is no joke, I hadn't heard from him in like years. My phone rang and it was David Krumholtz. And leaves me the nicest message. And he says, I'm probably not going to do a pilot this year, but I just want to let you know, I read your pilot because my agent sent it to me. And I love it. And if I were going to do one, I would do yours. But, and then I called him. I said, I wrote it for myself. He goes, oh, then forget it. He goes, you should absolutely be doing it. At the end of the day, I guess who played it? David Krumholtz.
yeah, he did. And is there like unabashed? But I mean, I get that's what I mean. Like, does this go all the way back to that alleyway behind some Broadway theaters?
Really. I always knew that David was really different. It was only certain things. It was only like, you know, when he got, it was like when they were making the movie of the Neil Simon play Lost in Yonkers, and you know, that, like the Neil Simon stuff, like I really always wanted to do. And so when he got the movie, he didn't end up, he wasn't able to do it because I think he was working somewhere else. I think he was doing like Adam's Family Values or something like that. But I never like looked at like Adam's Family Values and like, oh, I should have played that role. It was only like certain things where I was like, oh man, like, but I always understood he and I are actually very, very different. So it was never that. It was more just like, wow, that's really cool. I don't know. I never really felt that. Even when he played the role I wrote for myself, I didn't feel weird. I didn't feel weird about it. I think because he's great. So I think he brings a lot to the table, you know. Did anybody do anything damaging? I mean, definitely people said stuff to me along the way. A very famous Broadway director told me, I used to use my middle name. My name was Andrew Harrison Leeds. And he told me, he was like, just so you, thanks, I appreciate it. Well, I stopped using it because he said to me when I was a kid, he goes, just so you know, a lot of directors won't hire you because they'll, you know, if you use your middle name like that. Yeah, I think he was just saying like, because it's like a, you know, it's like, sounds like, you know,
pretentious or
pretentious. Thank you. I remember the other cast member saying, that's so mean. Don't say that to him. But guess what? I thought about it for years and eventually I got rid of the middle name. And by the way, maybe that was fine. Maybe that was the right way to go. Maybe it was good advice. I don't know. But like, no, I definitely had acting teachers that like really like drilled me like hard about like how to say certain lines and, you know, and how to do certain things. And those things were hard for me to let go of because I definitely thought of it as like I said, like you sort of like in a sport where you're trying to like make baskets, you know, instead of just being an actor. I also started taking classes when I moved here. I wasn't getting any jobs. I auditioned for 100 things the first year I was out here after college. And that was also what was hard about it was seeing somebody like David and seeing all these other kids that I grew up with who kept acting instead of going to college. And they were all continually acting.
Yeah. Let's talk about that transition there. So you didn't go just to college. You went to Stanford. And what was that? And you have a
degree. AJ's had such a big, when AJ read this, he had such a big heart on. He's like, you went to Stanford. Oh my God. And I'll give you context for this, which is like, I think our big debate or conversation we've had since we started this podcast there's a big section of this conversation that revolves around this idea. Cause I think every former kid actor faces this big fork in the road where you go, do you go to college and go do that and take a break from your career or not? And it's, and it's a very big deal and it has affected people in all different kinds of ways. But anyway, AJ, ask your question. Sorry.
Well, so you get a degree in computer science, I think, right? Or something similar.
Yeah, that's right.
And what is that decision like? You're working a lot as a young person, and then the opportunity comes to go to school. And so the debate, Chris and I have talked about this ad nauseum on this show, but basically you turn 18 as an actor, and there's this thing of, oh my God, this is like the perfect age because you can play younger, you can work all of these hours as an adult. It's the perfect time to be an actor. And I'm sure you're going through that question in your own mind, but ultimately you made the decision to go to school and forego acting for a period of time.
You know, I didn't really think about it at the time. I thought everybody was just like, when I was like in 10th grade and I was like doing a movie and everybody was like, okay, you know, 11th grade though, you go back to school and you try to get into a good college. That's what you do. And I was like, okay, I didn't really think about it. I auditioned for one thing. I mean, maybe a couple things, but really one thing when I was in 11th grade, which was a pilot for CBS that David Krumholz was the lead of.
Does he know this? Have you ever told him? Yeah. You're like, by the way, David, really? Yeah.
So funny. Oh no, he was the lead of, and I ended up I think he helped me get the job. I got the job playing his friend in the show. Which was cool. And also another situation where they were like, you guys might look too much the same. Go to Lens Crafters and get blue contact lenses, which I did. These blue eyes were a big thing for me, clearly. I still look at people with blue eyes and I think, God, you're so lucky. Just beautiful blue eyes.
I have the same thing with like with AJ's type hair, that like old DiCaprio bangs in your eye thing. I was always like, oh, yeah. I was like, oh, I want that just so like, bad. Got, like, that was like
natural, beautiful highlights. With his complexion.
Exactly. Highlights
guys,
to it.
Guys, stop it. Oh, shiny. My God.
Come on, dog. Oh, man.
Guys, it's pathetic. Just too much.
I also just want to comment too. Like, we always think of like whitewashing, you know, as like, you know, when it comes to like, you know, like, you know, someone Asian or someone black, you know, and it's so funny to hear it of like, just like a Jewish white guy, you know, like we're gonna make your eyes super blue, you know.
That's right, really right, funny. Right. No, people, you know, I do think times are different now than they were, but you know,
totally,
people talk about this a lot, and I'll get it wrong, but like, prior to like Seinfeld and Friends, there weren't a ton of shows with Jewish characters on them. And then even Seinfeld, you know, he's the only Jewish person on the show, right? Yeah. They're, you know, George, Elaine, and Kramer are not Jewish, interestingly. But then on, you know, and our Friends, they were obviously, there were some Jewish characters. But so I think like, it just was a, yeah, there was it was a specific time where people really believe that people want to see white, you know, Christian
attractive, yeah,
people, you know, on television. That's what they're looking for. And maybe they were, you know, I don't know. I have no idea. But but anyway, so I, you know, that's where you grew up, and where, whether or not that came from the industry to me, or it came from my family, or from an agent, I it probably was all these things of everybody just kind of feeling like, you know, let's, because that's the other thing too, is like when you're darker, right, and you have like dark hair, and you're like, people are like, oh, people ask me too sometimes, are you Latin, you know? And unfortunately, the answer is, you know, there's the worst thing you can do in this business is look one way but not actually be that thing, right?
I know, because that's so funny.
That's the worst. Like, you kind of want to, you know, today you want to look like what you are, because otherwise I think it makes it very hard for people to be okay with you playing. What were you going to say?
Yeah. I mean,
Chris is living that every day.
Agent, I've talked it. Yeah. I live this all the time, because I'm actually Cuban, and I changed my name to my mother's maiden name as a young performer, because they were like, you don't look Spanish. And I didn't speak Spanish. And they're like, there's no way you're playing a Spanish guy. I was like, yeah. And they couldn't get me an audition for a white kid, they were like, yeah, and you're mixed. But then these days I'm like, I need to throw that name back into the mix, you know, like, partially because they're like, look, man, you know, like, we want to be really more inclusive, and we want everybody to have a shot. And suddenly, you know, you feel like I've got an open road to be a full thing. But it's also hard. I'm like, I've never played a Spanish character. I don't think anyone will ever cast me as a Spanish character.
You know, it's like James Rene Rodriguez, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
Like,
yeah,
exactly. You know, now he's embraced it. And then, you know, I'm sure in the beginning, somebody told him, hey, don't use that name, because people won't want to hire you if they think you're Latin, you know? So it's kind of unfair that like somebody like you or like him kind of got trapped in this area where you thought it was actually hurting you, which it probably was at the time.
It was at the time. Yeah. Yeah. Now it might, you know, it's, one would be totally acceptable and fine. But you're right. I don't know. A few years ago, I went through this really scary. I saw an actress. She was an Asian actress, and she went on Twitter and like told Pete, like, she getting a lot of success and a big fan base, and mentioned to the fans, yeah, I changed my name, you know, so that I sounded less Asian because I wasn't getting auditions.
Right.
And she's like, and now I'm bringing back my name. And you would assume that everybody would be like, yeah. And instead Twitter was like, go fuck yourself. And like, just berated this poor actress. And she's like, no, you don't understand. Like, that's the way it was. Like, it's not, things have changed. So I'm changing with it. And I remember like when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's terrifying. Cause like, I would love to admit that out loud, to be like, yeah, actually, cause my real last name's Rodriguez. And it'd be like, yo, I was a Rodriguez and I changed it. And I'm still a Rodriguez legally.
By the way, you know, I don't mean to like say like, oh, woe is me. It's not like, you know what I mean?
No.
If you're an Asian actor, you know, forget, I mean, it's like, it's way harder. It's just way harder. Yeah. There're just not as many roles for you, you know, unfortunately, and hopefully that changes. But like, you know, but it isn't, you know, I do relate to it, but it's not obviously of the same scale.
No, but
so Andrew, just to close the, well, I won't, I just want to close the loop on this. So basically, there was never a question. You were going to go to school. So you ultimately do decide to go to school. You graduate. But it sounds like immediately after graduation, you're back auditioning in LA. You want to get back to acting. Is that the case? Or did you try your hand at what you got a degree in?
So I did that in 11th grade. I did this pilot with David Krumholtz. And I remember walking around at the back lot at the Warner Brothers Ranch, and him being like, he'd done so many pilots at that point. I was my first pilot. And he was like, God, I really hope this gets picked up. And I go, you want to do this for 7 years? I was like 15 at the time. I was like, you want to do this for 16. I was like, you want to do this for 7 years? That sounds terrible. I was like, I don't know. Meanwhile, now, of course, I would kill, you'd kill for that. But like, but it didn't get picked up. I ended up applying to a bunch of schools. I got into Stanford. So, I got into Stanford, and the other place I think I was considering was MIT. Strangely, I got into these schools, which I didn't really have. I was good at math. And so I think people sort of thought, okay, I guess he could, he's interested in this. Maybe he could do that. I went to Stanford, and I spent the majority of my time directing musicals and things like that, because that's what I love to do. And I wouldn't ever be in any of them, basically, because I was shy, and I just thought people would be expecting a lot. And because I had done it as a kid, and speaking of Major Payne, I remember one day I was in my dorm, and this is not that long after Major Payne, right? It's only like a few years after Major Payne. I remember being in my dorm room, and like a thing like slid under my door, and it was like a photo. Someone had like figured out that I was in Major Payne, because I didn't tell anyone.
Yeah.
And they had like printed it out, and they're like, why didn't you tell us? And I was like, I don't know. What am I going to say?
Hey guys, what are you guys doing Friday night? You want to watch Major Payne?
Right there, exactly. So, I went to school, and I thought I was going to go to school, and I was going to graduate, and I always wanted to design like roller coasters and water slides. And like, I was really interested in movies and things like that. And so I thought
that's
like,
Richie Rich kid, cool kid thing you ever could want to do.
Totally. So I had read like all these autobiographies on Michael Eisner and Michael Ovitz. And I thought I was going to graduate and like get a job at Disney and eventually run Disney. That's what I wanted to do.
You called up your old agent and you were like, I'm back in it. I updated the resume. I'm back in it.
Well, so after I majored in computer science, and all these people were getting job interviews, like there was a career fair. And so I was like, all these people are like being flown different places for these job interviews, because it's Stanford computer science, like people want that. So I got a couple of job interviews, one for Motorola, and they flew me to Chicago. I had no intention of taking the job. That was like a miserable situation. But then I got this interview with Adobe, because I was like, I always liked Photoshop. And I was like, I think it'd be cool to like work on that application. And so I got this interview, and I went to the interview, and the guy says to me, he goes, I looked at your resume. You applied for an interview, and I didn't give you the interview. And then you applied again. And I looked at your resume, and I said, this guy is never going to come work for me. He's clearly going to move to LA and be an actor. And I was like,
you got me.
Not a chance. I said, I'm serious about this. I'm really interested. So he had me come into the office. I spent the day in the office, and he said, he made me a very generous offer. One that if I had actually taken, I probably would not have to be worried about money ever again, at this point, because of like all the stock and all the stuff. And so what he didn't realize at the time, because I didn't tell him, was that I actually wasn't even graduating, because I even though I majored in computer science, I was always behind on all of my classes because I had no skills, academic skills at all, because growing up I just didn't do any schoolwork, right? So
you were just on Broadway and singing. Yeah.
My mom wrote my papers for me. So like, that's hilarious. So I got this.
Oh, I'm so glad I'm not the only one.
It's so funny. I had no idea what I was doing. And so I wasn't graduating on time, because I'd like failed too many classes. And so the guy says to me, he goes, I kind of need to know if you're going to take the job or not, because if I don't hire somebody, my team will lose this position. I'll lose the funding for this position if I don't hire someone by a certain date. I said, I just worried about like moving to San Francisco and cooking for myself. And I started like making all those excuses, and he goes, You'll come. My wife and I will teach you how to cook. It'll be great. I said, all right, I need some time to think about it. Even though I, again, had no intention of doing it because I couldn't. And because I wasn't graduating. And the day he called me, like the deadline where he was going to lose his funding, he called me. He goes, are you doing it or not? And I said, I'm really sorry. I can't take the job. And he goes, okay, bye. And hung up the phone. And then an hour later, I got a call from the CEO of Adobe. And he said, hi, I'm so-and-so. And I said, hi. And he goes, so just so you know, Jordan's going to lose funding. He thought you were going to take this job. And if you don't take it now, you'll never work at Adobe. This is it. This is your last chance. And I said, and I was like, literally sleep, it was like 11 a.m. and I was sleeping. And I was like, yeah, I'm really sorry. I can't.
Right now.
I feel terribly, but I can't do it. So anyway, so then I finished school. I moved back to LA. And yeah, I don't know, my agent, Bonnie Leitke, I don't know if you ever worked with her.
She's infamous though. What was it? It was Gold, Marshak, and Leitke. That's right. That's right.
She represented every Leonardo DiCaprio, every kid actor. It was crazy. Yeah. But anyway, so she called me. She goes, you know, come back to LA. I'll represent you. So I was like, okay, great. And that's what I did. And I honestly didn't think too much about it, which is sort of weird because I really should have moved to New York. That was like definitely a mistake, but it was just sort of like, I don't know. I don't know why I just moved to LA. It just seemed easier, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Or I think I did think like, oh, now I'm at this age where like I can play teenagers and I'm an adult. And so there's all these TV shows with teenagers. It's like, it made sense in a certain way. But to answer your question, I didn't realize it. I went to college. Once I got back from college and I saw all these friends of mine who were just working nonstop and couldn't get a job. I had 100 auditions and 5 callbacks in a year and I didn't get a single job, not even a line. I was like, oh, I kind of maybe blew it here because everybody else is working and I'm not, you know.
I can totally hear you. I have two questions about it. Oh, I think I lost visual though.
Oh no, there we go. I'm gonna come back. Here we go. Okay. Yeah.
I had two questions then. One, how did you then? What happens? You do it for a year and then you slowly then started to work and it moved in a good direction for you, or did it not? And then the other question is like, as you revisit the Adobe conversation in your head, do you ever like, how does that, I'm sure you're totally okay with that right now and particularly at the moment, but like, were there times where you were like, Andrew, what the fuck did you do? Like, was there ever a time where you thought, oh, you should have?
I definitely thought like, I probably should have gone and worked there for 3 years and then I would have been like kind of set in a lot of ways.
Set for life.
When I moved to LA, like, you know, any money I made as a kid, I spent on college. So I moved to LA, I had like $7,000. That was it. You know, and so I was tutoring and, you know, I never really thought like, oh, I should have taken that job. There are other things I should have done. I should have made my own movie when I got here. I should have started, you know, I should have been doing more. I did start taking acting classes, which were really helpful and did help me become better for sure. But to answer your question, it's taken a long time to be able to feel like, oh, I can get a job. Like I can get a job. It's taken a long time. Yeah. And even now I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. You know, I'll say this for what it's worth. I don't, you know, maybe you're totally aware of it or not or whatever, but you know, what I've learned from my experience is that, you know, all the sort of experience or successes or failures or whatever, just the experience itself of performing as a young actor, there comes a point then throughout your 20s where you like, I don't know, where I had realized, at least for me, because my career didn't ever get to a place where it was like irreversibly successful, you know, where I didn't like cross some line where I was like, okay, I can feel very cozy. I don't know if any actor really does, but I'm sure a few do. That didn't happen. And because of that, I always all of a sudden have had this slow experience of going like, oh, I've had to like do what every actor has to do, you know, which is I've had to go back to, I've had to one, make the decision to really do it as an adult. And then I've had to back that up with a lot of really hard, grueling work sometimes and a lot of humility and a lot of like, you know, and like you kind of just sort of threw out there very casually now, like should have made your own movie. You know, it's like I go like, oh, right, I have to do all the stuff that every actor has to go do. You know, you have to endeavor, you have to become a writer, you have to become a director, you have to, you know, you can't just sit there auditioning and you know, and cross your fingers for the rest of your life. You know, and that's not an easy, that's not what I thought I was signing up for as a kid or as a young adult, you know, at all. And so for what it's worth, like, I don't know if you realize, like, that is a, I think it's an incredibly difficult thing to do, especially when someone like you, like, you know, when you said at college, you didn't even mention to people major pay, you sort of, it seems like you compartmentalized that a little bit, or didn't, you know, you weren't suddenly at college at Stanford being like, of course I'll direct this play. I've been on Broadway. You know, it's like, right. You were like, you were really humble about it. You were like, actually, I don't even want to put myself out there, 'cause I'm, you know, I'm here at college, I'll do something else. So I don't know, that I'm sure has been very challenging, but also I don't know if you realize what a feat that is. And it sounds like, you know, you've been working, it seems like, on very cool things. And I know on Barry and Zoe's Infinite Playlist. And my guess is, if I'm guessing correctly, you know, is that that work is paying off and seeing some nice results for you. And kudos, I guess, is like the very easy way to put it. Like, awesome.
Thanks. No, I feel really lucky about, I feel like the things that I've gotten to work on have been really, really good quality with really good people. And I feel really lucky about that, because it's so hard. I mean, I know so many talented people who aren't working, and it's like, it's, you know, it's a mystery to me how it happens. I don't really understand why, you know, certain people get jobs and certain people don't. I don't quite get it exactly.
Blue contacts occasionally.
Blue contacts. So I feel really lucky. I guess I also am just sort of the mindset that you can't wait around for auditions or jobs. And mm-hmm. I think if I had auditions every day, I feel a little differently, but a lot of time I am just, you know, sort of, you know, I have found that, like, just being creative in like any number of ways has just been really helpful and really fun for me. And to the point where it's like, I never even think about it. It's like, oh, you know, I haven't done any acting in whatever it's been, a month and a half or something like that. I've been busy every single day. I've been so busy every single day. Like, I can't find a minute. Like, it's nuts. Whether it's I'm editing something or writing or, you know, writing, coming up with an idea, whatever it is, it's just, there's always something to do. So I think that's been a really good thing for me to find that. And I was always like that as a kid too. I was always like kind of like tinkering with things. Yeah. Some things are not that productive, you know, like, you know, whatever, making like a, you know, as a kid, like things that just like, I mean, they're fun, but they're not really like, they're not career building in any way, like making a model, a set model or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
But so I'm trying to focus a little bit more on things that actually might be helpful in the long run.
Yeah. No more building model trains. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna give up that hobby.
But yeah, I don't, yeah, I feel like good. I just feel like I could have done better, but you know, I feel like I wasted a lot of time after college.
Yeah.
I wasn't doing anything. Well, part of it was that I had to make money. So I was tutoring a lot. That takes a lot of energy and a lot of time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I got to imagine so. But, you know, but I want to use this, I mean,
Chris,
too,
as a transition.
Yeah.
I was going to, I have a transition question into our final two questions.
Yeah.
Okay. So Chris sounded like he had something else there. I did.
I was going to go into like, I don't know, man. I mean, I don't know, you know, acting in your 20s is I think for every actor is like really tricky, 'cause you are very much of this like very strange age where, you know, I think the work thins out for a lot of people, you know, for the most part. I think you're no longer playing teenagers or you're in college necessarily, and you're not really playing adults. And I think that gets a little trickier. And you're also coming to your own as an adult, which I think is like, you're not fully formed. And that can be tricky for people just as human beings, I think, for what you bring to the work and stuff too, you know, but, so maybe you're being a little hard on yourself also, but I get that too. I mean, but that's what I mean. Like, you know, that's a real actor's life. Like a real actor's life is not, I think, what a lot of former kid actors tend to experience it as, you know, which is like, you know, you don't have to work a second job to go try to audition, you know, and you right, don't have to find the resolve in yourself to be able to be willing to do something like that, you know, and that's right. Actually what I think it takes to be an actor, you know, is you got to have that in you or cultivate that or not, you know, and so,
right.
You know, and that's what I mean by it's a feat, you know, it's a feat because I've known a lot of former kid actors who, I mean, AJ and I have a really close friend of ours. He started to have to go that route and he was like, I'm not into it, man. I don't care about it enough to do that, to like, mm-hmm. you know, hustle or find a way to be creative outside of not getting roles and things I want, you know, or just like, you know, and so it doesn't happen for everybody. Or sometimes people want that and they don't want to put in the work for it either, you know? So that's why I say from the outside, it's very impressive. Before the final couple questions, though, like when you said, like when you you know, you and I were talking when you saw that this podcast was happening, you're like, oh man, that sounds like a great conversation. When you first hear about that, is there anything in your mind, like we don't even know not to ask, that like comes to your mind about that conversation, your experience? Like, is there something that you like had hoped you wanted to talk about or that it even brought up for you? You know, you're like, oh yeah, I've never thought about that or this or, you know.
It's a good question. I don't know. I'm not sure. I just thought it would be fun to talk about. I don't know. I feel like I want to. I mean, it's interesting because I know you, Chris. I don't know you at all, AJ, right? We've met once a week ago.
Now we know each other.
But I guess I also am curious to hear more about your both of your experiences. I don't know, like, how old were you when you started? Like, I don't know any of those things really about you guys, but so I'm curious about that. I didn't really ask any questions.
Oh yeah. No, it's good. I mean, this is your thing and we can regale it for you to save. Yeah, to save anybody listening to hearing our stories like repeatedly. But what I will say is for sure, like everything you said today is so on par with my experience and what I was doing.
I relate to so much of what you've had to say today in a bizarre, in a very bizarre way, probably more so than any other guest we've had on the show so far, even the really small details like the colored contacts thing. It's just the bizarre small details. Okay, so here's what I wanted to ask you. As you were a kid, and you looked at your life in the future, did you assume I will be an actor for the rest of my life? Or did you assume that this is just a thing I'm doing now and you're going to go become Michael Ovitz or build roller coasters? Or did you not think about it at all?
I didn't think I would be an actor. I don't think I thought I'd be an actor. Although I don't know that I ever imagined not being an actor. I just always thought it was going to be, I thought I would be like, I remember like looking into applying to grad school for theater directing. I remember like even considering like going to grad school for set design, like, or musical theater writing. I think I just always thought I would be able to do everything. I remember when I was doing Les Mis as a kid and they interviewed me for like the local newspaper, and they said, or it's actually, I think I have a video clip of it actually. It was on the news. It was like, what do you want to do when you grow up? And it was like, well, I want to design roller coasters and water slides for 3.5 years. I want to be a magician for 2 years. I want to, you know, do this for 1.5 years. I want to be an interior designer. Interestingly, I don't know why, for 4 years. Like I want to be a lawyer for 5 years. So I think in my mind, I was just like, oh, you just could do it all. I don't know. There was no reason that you had to just pick one thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I thought, well, I've that already sounds about right. the acting thing. So, and I still think I'm probably going to check off a decent number of those things.
You don't strike me as someone who's just like, nah, I'm just going to stay auditioning and working. Like you sound like you've already, put a lot of focus and energy into all kinds of endeavors, and we'll continue to.
Yeah. I don't know if I'll ever get to actually design a roller coaster, unfortunately, but we'll see.
Maybe.
You never know. Yeah.
You never know.
There's still time, Andrew.
There's still time. Yeah. And who knows? Okay. Maybe you're directing a show and there's a roller coaster that needs needs to be built. You never know.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Maybe it could be a VR roller coaster. There's a lot of there's many possibilities here of what this could be. Not the same. Okay, fine. Yeah. We're going to go for the physical roller coaster. Okay, so it's time for our final two questions here. Andrew, we ask everybody this. The first question is, if you have children, I don't know if you have children now or maybe if you do in the future, and one of them approaches you to say that they'd like to be an actor, mm-hmm. what would your answer be?
It's a great question. I would have always have said yes before. And now,
after talking to you guys, now I'm like, there's no way. There's absolutely no way.
I think because look, here's the deal. If you look at like a lot of our very successful actors, a lot of them were child actors, right? I mean, if you think about our movie stars now, right? Leonardo DiCaprio, Tobey Maguire, Emma Stone. I mean, Christian Bale,
Jennifer Lawrence. Yeah, I mean, there's
think of one that wasn't. I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal. Yeah. Who wasn't really? I mean, Kristen Wiig.
Yeah,
she wasn't. She wasn't a child actor. I mean, some of the like comedy people like were not, but like you know, are a lot of these big movie stars. So it's hard because it's like, well, if you want to be successful, it does help to start as a kid in any field. So, but I guess I would probably say at this point, if my kid wanted to do that, I would probably say, make your own thing. I'd probably say like, you don't need to go do it on a professional set. Like here's a camera and here's a typewriter and go and make your own thing and figure it out. And if you still love doing it, then, you know, what?
I was just going to say, if you handed a kid a camera and a typewriter, they'd look at you like, what the fuck is this?
Or you're Andrew Leeds as a kid and you're like, I'm doing it. Here we go.
I think I would encourage them to just do it themselves. And if an opportunity came about, I would be more inclined to let them do theater probably than I would to be like, because I think I would worry about would be like getting into the mode of like, I got a job. Now I have to get another job. Audition, get another job, you know, instead of actually expanding themselves in other ways, you know, because I think there are other ways to expand yourself that you kind of lose track of to some degree if you're just focused on getting acting jobs, right? All the time in college that I could have actually been reading books and learning things and getting better at other things I didn't do. And I think that was a mistake. Now, maybe there are kids that can do both, but I also think you run into the potential possibility that you, you know, that the kid gets messed up, right? I mean, there are a ton of people that get really messed up. So, you know.
Yeah. There's a,
it's complicated.
Yeah. Well, no, but I think that speaks to a big point, which is I think that there is a certainty that you will, no matter who you are, where you're from or what your experience is that you will face that possibility at least, you know, at the minimum, you will face that possibility. You'll probably put your toe in the water of something that can lead you down a path of, the easy way to say it is like just being totally messed up.
Right.
And there's no way around that. You know, I don't think anyone's immune to that as a young performer. You know, whether that becomes your path or not is a whole other crazy complicated conversation. But you're right. I love that answer. And I always think like that's the best answer for anyone endeavoring into any part of a creative field in general, but particularly the entertainment industry is like, you know, I mean, whether you want to be a set designer or work in wardrobe or work with camera or be, a gaffer or work in lighting, you're like, you know, I've yet to meet somebody that is rarely do I meet somebody that's fully fulfilled, you know, in what they're and not always kind of telling themselves, I should follow my instincts other places too. I should be doing this. I should make my own stuff. I should be, you know, because it's such a big collaborative art form and, you know, and it's not always up to you. So,
if the kid were like me and loved, like I loved musicals more than anything. Like that was all I cared about as a kid. So if that kid were like that and that's what they loved, I would have be hard pressed to say like, and they have a talent for it. I would be hard pressed to say like, no, you can't do it.
Yeah.
You know,
do you think you could put in the time that your parents did of like taking them to auditions and
no.
It's so like, you could do it, but you're on your own, kid. Here's $50. Hail a cab. That's
it. Yeah. Well, I mean, my parents were able to do it. My mom was able, you know, when I was 8 years old, she would put me on a plane by myself. Like, people don't do that anymore, but.
Really?
You know. Yeah.
Where did she send you? Where's the farthest? I can't believe we didn't get into this already. Where's the farthest?
She would drop me off at the airport in Tampa, Florida, and I'd get on a plane and I'd go to New York.
No way. And who would pick you up?
My aunt or uncle or, like, you know, someone would pick me up and then, you know. But when I was... By the time I was, I mean, this is common in New York. Anyway, by the time I was 12 or 13, like I was getting around by myself to some degree, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it was,
I know, loud. It's so wild when I picture it now. Like my wife's niece just turned 12 today. And it's like a picture of them. They're, you know, they live in Ireland and they're like picturing, like, I see this little wee girl and I'm like, oh my God. Like, yeah, like I got stuck. I was shoved onto the subway at 12, told like, yeah, just go over there and we'll see you there in 4 hours. I'm like, all right. I'm like, I can't imagine this little girl just like sitting on it, like trying to just, can I refill my Metro card? Like there's no way that happens. Yeah.
Crazy. That's
wild. Yeah, it really is. Well, this goes to our last question, which we like to ask people. So hence the name of the podcast, the Coogan Chronicles, is when you turned 18 or emancipated yourself, whenever you got access to your Coogan account money, what'd you do with it? I think we might've answered a little bit, but.
You know, I got to be honest with you. I don't know that I had like that account. That doesn't ring a bell.
No, there's no Coogan. We've heard this from kids, especially acting in New York, that New York didn't.
Yeah.
And I know this too. Like I didn't have a Coogan account really until I moved to LA. Because I don't think it's a part of theater or was then, but you did movies and shows and stuff. So you must have had.
I did two movies and I did one pilot. And my guess is that maybe because I lived in Florida, that maybe it didn't apply. But that's maybe I have some money sitting somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah, I was about to say maybe you need to make a phone call to SAG and see what's up.
Because it's 25% of your salary, right?
15. Yeah, so it's 15%. Yeah, 15% goes in. And you don't have access it until you're 18 years old.
18. I don't remember that, but maybe I had. But at that time, by the time I got out of college, like I said, I'd spent, you know, college, whatever I had made. You know, when we were living in New York, like obviously, like I was paying for our apartment and things like that because that's why we were there. So, you know, and I wasn't making a huge amount of money doing theater. You know, I made a lot of money doing voiceovers and jingles when I was a kid, but that all went to college, and then. I never felt though, I was always like sort of like in charge of my own money to some degree. Like if I wanted something, I was allowed to get it. I wasn't like ever, I never really wanted that much, but like, you know, I always sort of was able to, I don't know. I just like going, I was on the road with like Miss for 2 years and I just kind of knew like we have this much per diem. So we, you know, I always had that sort of built into me of like how to take care of that. So I was always sort of aware.
Did you ever get weird with it though? Were you ever like, was there a day where you were like, I'm going to buy 19 Cherry Cokes and I'm going to play every video game. You know, like, did you ever go nuts?
No, never. No.
Just.
No, never went nuts with that stuff. I mean, I'm definitely more nuts now than I ever have been before. I mean,
really?
Yeah. When I say, well, I mean, I just, you know, like this t-shirt, you know,
Is that a Kanye shirt? Like, were you like, yeah, were you like, no, yeah, I'm going like full. No.
But it's like, you know, it's like I normally wouldn't have spent more than $5 on a t-shirt. And now I'm like, it creeped up. It's like $10. Okay, well, $10 shirt, $15. Okay, $20. All right, yeah, sure. Why not? Well, might as well $30. It's like, you know, it's like you start your whole perspective changes. But, you know, but no, I've never done anything really that I can think of extravagant, really.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah,
no missteps with it. There was never anything where you were like, should have bought a Honda. I don't know why I bought a Land Rover. You know, was there any sort of, no, I mean, it's not a surprise if you didn't. I'm just prying because you're obviously an incredibly bright, mature, sophisticated person. So you probably, you know, you don't strike me as someone who was like, yeah, that's all right. I'll go ahead and send me and all my friends to Disneyland, you know, like you didn't seem like,
I mean, the most extravagant thing I ever did probably was I did take for a birthday, like a few years ago, it took a bunch of people. I took like 7 or 8 people to Mexico. Now I will say that sounds extravagant, but it was nothing. Cause I'm also like a very, very crazy frequent flyer, mile, like hoarder, like crazy hoarder of frequent. So, so I was able to do the whole thing for free. So it was fine, but it seemed extravagant. Yeah. But no,
that's very, I can't think that's of nice. Well, we're all going to be much closer friends. This is what I just decided.
Yeah, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on the show. Yeah, I enjoyed your perspective on this stuff, and you reminded me of certain things that I went through that were just so hyper specific to that experience of being a young performer or a teenage performer that just really made me laugh. So thank you for that. Thank you, this was great.
You guys are very kind.
I'll leave you. Yeah, and I'm so glad too. And I'll leave you with the same thing, to sort of reiterate that maybe in a different way of like, you know, whether you know it or not, like I think it's really extraordinary what you've done with your talent and with that experience what you built that into as an adult. And, you know, your writing is spectacular as well. And I'm excited. Maybe you've directed a ton of stuff and I'm unaware of it. I'm sorry, but Well, when you step into that role, cause I feel like you naturally fit that too.
I just directed my first thing actually.
Oh, see,
in the middle of editing. You did the table read for us. You were lovely.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Thanks for hiring me, Andrew.
Well, you didn't have blue eyes, so.
Gotcha. Exactly. I would have worn contacts, man. I'm Jewish. I'm not Jewish. Whatever you need.
You're fantastic. No, actually, we can talk about that another time. But I did just do that, and it was a really kind of amazing adventure, and hopefully it turns out well. But we'll see. By the way, did you guys ever do anything crazy with your Coogan money?
Yeah, I was real dumb. AJ, you were pretty. AJ was okay. No, AJ, you.
I was pretty conservative.
No. You weren't conservative. You did some crazy shit. You turned your garage into like a full blown music studio, like a recording studio.
I did spend a lot of money on music equipment and stuff like that. Yeah, it felt like an investment in myself, but yes, I did.
That's a great investment.
I did do that and spared no expense. Yeah.
But then, like within like a year or two of that, then you were like, I was like, do you even play guitar anymore? You're like, nah. it sort of fell a little flat. I've done all kinds of really dumb shit.
My favorite Chris thing was he leased a Lexus, an expensive Lexus, and then decided he wanted to get the seats embroidered with the Lexus symbol for some reason. so he custom embroidered the leather seats on a leased car
that I had to return later. Yeah, what did you do? And I was like, I didn't know how a lease worked. And they were like, well, you're going to have to pay for all the damage you put in. I was like, damage? Look at this beauty. So, yeah.
Why did you embroider the Lexus symbol?
I got really into one of my closest friends. We were really into like full, like the Fast and the Furious franchise-ish car
like
scene,
blue lights,
you know?
Under the car,
yeah, where we had like neon lights and I was in so and... I sunk some money into one car. I got like an expensive car and I sunk a bunch of money into it, and so like I would read these magazines and I'd see some weird like a Mercedes with like the Mercedes Benz embroidered into like the headrests, and I was like, dope, that's it, I want it. And so I would go to this janky little store in North Hollywood and asked this guy to do weird stuff to my vehicle that I didn't realize I had to return because nobody explained anything.
Wow. Anything to me. By the way, is there somebody that you look at, like, you know, you're asking me about David Krumholtz?
Tons. Yeah. I feel like I've had an incarnation of that actor like all the time.
The first one
a long time ago was an actor named Michael Gagliotta, who weirdly passed away, unfortunately. God rest his soul. And he was a young actor I auditioned with a ton as a kid growing up. But he was this big jockey Italian kid who was so confident. Yeah. I would be like, hi, Michael. And he'd be like, what's up, Chris? And I just remember I was like so jarred by like just the way he said hello. And then and then later on, it was a young actor named David Gallagher throughout my teenage years who was on Seventh Heaven. And he was also half Cuban. So he was one of the few kids that I knew. Like, he also changed his last name. We had the same thing. And our parents knew each other. And we would see each other at auditions all the time. And just like you kind of talked about today, these like network tests I'd go on and they'd be like, I never got them. But I would sit there and he was this like little gorgeous you know, blonde haired kid, really wholesome looking. And I was just like this ratty little, you know, it was like, you know, I didn't even like comb my hair that day. And I always felt, you know, and there was that. So there was that guy. And then eventually it became Shia. And so when I was like 15, 16, I started auditioning with Shia a bunch. And we did an episode of ER together. And it was one of those, like, we did chemistry reads. And we were playing, we had to play these kids who hated each other and got all these fights. And it sort of started off for a few years, this little, before he turned into like a mega movie star. It's it like,
right.
It started off like his, all his TV shows. It was always me and him and a couple, you know, so I would see him at all these auditions all the time. And, but I like you, I felt fortunate. I got a nice, it wasn't too hard for me to find a, carve out the train of thought of just like really understanding who I was and how different somebody else was. So I didn't hold on to that competition as much later, but I feel like I've gone through that at times, even now as an actor, you know, there's always like, there's always something where you go, you know, as you try to make sense of, you know, why or why not something happened for you or didn't, you know? So I don't know. I try to spend the least amount of time doing it, but I still do.
I hear you. I hear it's hard not to.
It's the crazy making part of it, you know, it really is. And
that's
which is why your story with your pilot has always been so like haunting and also clarifying for me. I was like, it's like one where you're like, that makes no sense, and it's enraging, but also like that's just the way things are. Just accept that, you know, you write a pilot for yourself that you're perfect for, and you're obviously very adept at doing it because you wrote it. And and yet you got to watch all these other actors audition for it and David Krumholtz do it. So,
you have to have your own agent call and say, the casting director comes in and say, so-and-so's agent just called and they said, like, you know, if we don't like pull the trigger on him today, like he's gonna, you know, test on something else. And then you have to call your own agent and be like, why are you like forcing me to test one of your other clients when you know I'm trying to play this role?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Back off, man.
I know. If it's one thing you can't like be biased towards, like your one client, that's Jesus. Crazy. I know.
I mean, that's anybody right there.
Is it? I guess so. Yeah. For one.
Wait, what'd you say?
For the other guy.
Here's what I'm really.
That's an amazing agent for the other guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really grateful you came on and we're so open and fun with us about this whole conversation.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Glad you enjoyed it. Yeah, we enjoyed it. I enjoyed it very much.
You guys are awesome.